Okay, we'll just start at what we just talked about the last time we chatted. So this is in 2020. I remember hitting you up. I think we rescheduled multiple times. And it was when the coronavirus, by the way, you can say whatever you want. It doesn't matter. But I think coronavirus had just started. And it was, I remember even being slightly hesitant to talk about it. Like, let me get this out of your face. Oh, shit. This way. Tech trouble, people. Okay, there we go. I remember being even hesitant to talk about it because I thought it was so new. It was like you thought it was kind of like a con or something was happening, but you didn't know exactly what was going on. And then we had that early days. Yeah, and that's one of the most viewed like generative energy episodes that is not Ray or Georgie.
Oh, that's nice. That's good. People think I don't waffle on too much.
Yeah. But 3 years later, I think people, again, we can go all over the map here. And obviously I want to talk about Ray. But we talked about nutrition stuff, like really, I mean, for an hour and a half, I think we talked about kind of our point of view of what Ray was saying nutritionally. But before we get into that, tell me about your experience kind of with the loss of Ray. I know he meant to you as much as he did to me. So what was that like?
Yeah, it was, heartbreaking, like you found. I think we were, he brought us together, didn't he?
Yeah.
Sort of, I think when I found his work, so what, I think 2011, yeah. 2010. That's when I was on a mission to find anyone else who was deciphering his work and, you know, as a practitioner too. And I think I found your book. Had you already written one of your books or perhaps maybe your article? So found Danny Roddy and we were my on calls regularly that back then, I think, which was so refreshing because you come across this information that's polar opposites to what the mainstream narrative is on nutrition. So to be able to share that with someone was kept me going, which was awesome. So luckily I found Danny then, but we haven't spoken much the last few years, have we? It's just been a blur. So I think, but reaching out to you, I think that week we got the news. I already was already having a really tough week myself. It was exactly a year since the passing of my father. So I was already feeling, quite emotional, and then got the news about Ray and it was all a bit much. So I think we connected then.
I can't imagine. Yeah, that's crazy because I think we had something set up, like, and your dad died, and then we moved it.
Yeah,
and then that's crazy.
And then it was a blink and a year passed, and another year of craziness in the world, and all the changes in our lives. But my first initial reaction when I got the news was, oh God! And I think I got a message from David Budworth and messaging yourself and called Dodie straight away, Dodie Anderson. I think did you ever connect with Dodie?
Yes, I'm embarrassed.
She was a very old friend of Ray's.
Super embarrassed to say I haven't called her. I need to call her.
She's divine. Yeah. She's been connected with Ray for 30 plus years, I think, and on weekly calls herself. So, and she's had a lot of loss in her life. So she was very much on her own and Ray's her lifeline. So checking in on her too. But,
just to clarify, we connected last year, but I haven't. I think it's just going to be the waterworks running, I think, if I talk to her.
Yeah,
so I've been putting it off. She's amazing. I like her a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's, it's life, isn't it? That's what you get to learn. And I think, we can only be so grateful that we connected directly with him so much and he gave us all so much. But I think, pretty amazing that we had so many years of Ray considering, his own personal health challenges since a young person. And he just pushed on and God, mentally whipped smart till the very end. Hey.
It didn't hit till a few weeks after that. Like, I think I was like cleaning my kitchen and I thought of some random thought and I was like, oh, I'm going to bounce this off Ray. And I was like, no, you're not. But that.
You have to bounce it off him yourself in here somehow. But it's and I think that's what we both were discussing, I think, in our little messages, but that feeling like, in your life when the people who you aspire towards and who are your guides, I hope, I suppose, and mentors, and they start dropping away and that feeling like, oh God, we have to step up here and we can't bounce that off them or the elders. At least, at the very least, I mean, we have each other, which is amazing, and a pretty tight, lovely community of people who've been students of RAISE as well. And obviously lifetime's worth of work we have to refer to that he put out there.
Yeah, that's the thing. It feels almost, I feel spoiled. You know, you got to bounce every random thought off of him that you could possibly think of. And yeah, I've said this 100 times, but it's like you and I could easily be 100 years be in the future and be like, there was this guy named Ray Peet and he said all this stuff, and you have to like connect the dots and try to figure out what he's saying. But we literally had access to him and could email him and do podcasts with him. I mean, it's just absolutely nuts. But
so cool. Yeah.
But yeah, you said it, like everybody has a bigger job now, and like the things I've said, oh, email Ray about, like now I have to take the time to research those things, and that makes you a better version of yourself. You know, you're not putting it off or deferring to perceived authority or something. So
definitely.
Yeah.
And I think he was training us for that though. Don't you think?
I think
like
so.
There would be times where you'd email him a certain question, in the back of your mind thinking, I'm pretty sure I know the answer. I'm pretty sure I know what it's going to say. But the way he would respond was be so matter of fact and no beating around the bush, almost as if to say, come on, you've got this sort of thing. And you're like, also what I, just so respected about him and loved about his approach was that just no BS, just straight up, that kind of old school straightness and not fluffing around with political correctness or anything. Just straight and spoke straight from the heart. Amazing.
I would always when I'd be waiting for Georgie to kind of arrive on the podcast, I'd always call Ray and like talk to him for 5 minutes. And I'd always ask him like the most controversial questions I could possibly think of. And the dude was just always super straight. Like he wouldn't, sugarcoated or anything. And so I was a few weeks ago, I was listening to those and I think I burst into tears again because it was just me and him asking my weirdo questions to him. And he always provided insight and orientation. But
on every topic though, wasn't it? This is the lovely thing too, is far beyond nutrition, you know, just everything. And he encouraged that critical thinking, not just in the realms of health, but in the world, in the universe, like, you know, he had something to say and something to, a little nugget of insight to give on everything. He was just such a broad thinker.
Something I did want to talk to you about, shifting subjects a little bit here. What did you think of Ray's kind of protein revelation? Did that impact you at all? Did you think of like, because I asked him maybe in 2020, I was like, Ray, if you eat some beef, would you, and you could only do one thing, would you balance it with calcium? Would you drink coffee to inhibit the iron, or would you take glycine? And he actually said he'd do it in that order. He'd have the calcium, the coffee, then the glycine. And so I mean, it's classic Ray, like kind of like shifting and being malleable and thinking. But I thought his lowering of the protein, obviously Ray was dealing with something, you know, and I don't have all the details, but and I kind of speculated that whatever he was dealing with, the low protein probably helped in some way, shape, or form. Again, complete, total speculation. But I thought him lowering it was really interesting. And it kind of has been stuck in my brain since he died. I've been thinking about it more and more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was getting little kind of nuggets from Dodi for months leading up to his announcement that perhaps lowering protein was a good idea for, you know, depending on the person. And what she was kind of passing on to me was that it was particularly past a certain age. Mm-hmm. So perhaps definitely through the growth years and need was there and up until into the 20s, perhaps 30s, if very strenuous, you know, endurance at all sorts of exercise, if that was a regular thing for a person, perhaps their need was definitely higher and muscle growth and that sort of thing. But then past a certain age, it was perhaps a better idea to restrict it to a point or not go overboard. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that was going to put too much strain on kidneys, but it was the methionine that she was relaying to me was a particularly important factor in lowering that at least. So yeah. And I think he's never been one to go on about overdoing anything anyway, and everything is in context of that person. So if someone's quite small and not overly active, then I don't think they'd ever do well to do, you know, probably more than 90 grams of protein, perhaps even less. So, yeah, I don't think I was too shocked by the thought, but it made sense that as a person aged, that their requirement for protein was perhaps, you know, not so much, and maybe they just needed to eat more frequently and keep their sugars up. Maybe other factors were just as important.
I feel you. I couldn't agree more. The thing that spooked me a little bit, not spooked me, that's not the right word, but that was interesting to me when we had him on the podcast the last time. I was like, Ray, could somebody who's sick lower their protein for a better experience? And he's like, oh yeah. So I was like, oh, that changes things considerably. Like, it's not just, yeah, oh, you're old, therefore you should eat less protein. It's like, oh, you're ill, you should probably eat less too. And so,
absolutely.
The methionine and then the homocysteine, like, I'm sure you probably get homocysteine tested. He was saying that was reflective of reductive stress. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting too, because that's of course the opposite of what he's arguing for, like staying in the oxidized state. And so I don't know. I think I'm telling you, like, well, these things are going in my head. So you know what?
No, but I think it's all relevant. Exactly like you said, if someone's sick, well, where on the scale do you decide where someone's sick or not? And there's a lot of people walking around and surviving, but they're not thriving. And perhaps you'd almost put them in the sick category. So maybe them going, you know, overdoing protein, particularly the muscle meat, is a really bad idea. But even shifting the idea of what protein is, because I think a lot of people straight away assume protein, and of course they go for, you know, predominantly muscle meat, eggs, then maybe dairy and cheese, but they forget, you know, the gelatinous components, and the shellfish and things like that. And maybe if they had just as much protein per se, but of those different proteins, maybe they'd get away with that much protein and they'd feel better for it. Mm-hmm. So I think it depends on what kind of protein you're talking about too. Absolutely.
100%. Yeah. I feel like that last thing you said, again, I think we've talked about this, and I think we're both pretty easygoing towards nutrition. You know, it's like, it serves a purpose to do what you want in life. It's not the point of your life is to not obsess about nutrition.
Oh my God. I'm so glad you said that. That's been my conclusion the last few years too. It's like, let's live beyond nutrition a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I just talked.
Go out there and make stuff.
I just talked to Kitty yesterday. That was basically the
did you? Oh, good.
The gist of the conversation, I want to talk more about that. But anyways, it's like, where do I want to go with this? I am pretty easygoing about my nutrition, but I was thinking to myself, you got to get 90 to 100 grams of protein. And I was pretty regular about it. And now I'm not like that at all. Like,
how do you feel for it?
I don't think about it at all. So I don't know. It's kind of hard because of everything that's going on in the meantime. Like, I think of myself as a happy person, and I can function and do all the work I need to do every day, which is a lot. But just not thinking about that, trying to basically getting in touch with myself as much as possible about what I want, you know? And so it's almost like he gave me one last thing, like right before he passed away. And it was like complete relief, dissociation from thinking about like, oh, I need this macronutrient or that macronutrient.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and we could do all that perfectly, but in the meantime, you blink and 20 years of your life have gone. Yeah. for what? I mean, it's finding that happy medium is just so important, and and the obsession around it too. That in the end elevates stress too. And ultimately, isn't that the most important thing we're trying to achieve here, is just reducing stress and finding a way to enjoy food but doesn't hold you back. That's a topic I've been on with Dodie the last few months as well too. And she's come to that same conclusion. And you can have a client with the best looking diet on paper and they're still not thriving. And you get to the crux of it and they hate their job. They're not in love with their partner. There's so many factors. They don't sleep at night. They're on the screen too much. And no amount of perfect food is going to offset that either. So it's definitely everything.
Yeah. Well said. How do you approach that when you're talking with somebody new? Like, do you, how do you like adjudicate if you're going to work on dietary stuff, or how do you get to the core elements of their life that are like a mess? And you can only do so much talking to them on Zoom. So you're not going to tell them to get a divorce or go move to another location. So how do you parse that when you're talking to somebody?
Good question. Gosh. If I see the red flags, I'd probably say, I'm sorry. I'm
out of here.
Look, I think before someone even begins working with me, I put them through a pretty thorough health check or a questionnaire to give me the clearest, you know, possible picture of their life in this current moment, a bit of a snapshot. Mm-hmm. And the questions delve into their living arrangements and their work and the hours they work and their perception of their own health and their sleep quality. So all those symptoms, and for people to then, I hope, you know, reflect on that questionnaire and go, oh, actually, yeah, that's a factor. But I think maybe the type of people who approach me compared to the type of people who go to some generic program or order light and easy or, you know, want a quick fix at a diet, perhaps they've been there, done that, and sort of learnt along the way that maybe there's more to my wellness than this. I try and put that sort of idea out there in my articles and things to maybe hint to people that, you know, it is more than just sort of the food you eat. So perhaps if you're not addressing that yet, I can only help you so much. Mm-hmm. But I guess when you work with someone for 3 months at least at a time, you get to know them quite personally, you know, become quite friendly, and they then, I suppose, let down their guard a little bit and might tell you things about their lifestyle that they might not have mentioned to a, you know, on a one-off sort of consultation to a practitioner that makes them acknowledge that, oh, I really do need to address this. And honestly, changing your food's the easy bit, but changing your job or uprooting your life, that's the hard stuff.
Yeah.
So it's, I guess at least making people aware that that stuff's important is one thing, but it's up to them to want to make the changes, definitely.
And so you tell them to eat the pro-metabolic diet and then you're done, right?
Pretty much, because there is a diet and it's written out. The Ray Peake diet that he wrote, not.
Well, it's even worse than that I can't remember what podcast, but like pro-metabolic in the scene just meant that you ate carbs. It didn't really mean anything else other than that. And so like I could sense that that word was becoming, I mean, I don't, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I really never used that. It was extremely unhelpful. But like, okay, so when you're talking about nutrition with somebody, are there guides? Like what are they supposed to look for? Are you getting lab tests or pulse and temperature? Like how do you know if something is working?
Pulse and temperature, I will get them to do over a period of time, and definitely listing every little, might seem little insignificant, but every single symptom they experience for women, their menstrual cycles and how that looks for them and whether it's a, you know, it's a trauma or not. So I want to bring it back to symptoms because I don't think the body does lie. And also too, if in themselves they've come to you and they've taken that step and invested that money and all of that, there must be something in them that knows that I don't feel as well as I could. Mm-hmm. But yeah, getting them aware that there are diagnostic tools that they can use themselves and even beyond the thermometer, but just checking when, you know, little things like if their fingertips feel freezing compared to the warmth of their torso, the colors of the base of their nail beds, the, you know, the pinkness of their cheeks, the clarity of their eyes, all those sort of things too. Because I think even bloods, and we've had these conversations before, bloods are certainly helpful to a point, but it can depend on the time of the day or the month that those bloods are taken. There are issues that can happen in labs and perhaps they're not as accurate as they could be. And they're definitely helpful, but I think it has to come along with everything else, the bigger picture stuff, and not to depend on those sort of checks that are dependent on a lab and external sources. But if they just brought it back in to themselves a little bit and had that confidence maybe to just go, well, I think I can tap into when I'm feeling good and when I'm not feeling good and when I'm breathing deeply and when I'm managing stress really well, like those are the diagnostics, I think, that aren't, you know, obviously not quite so miserable, but I just think it's that helping the client become their own practitioner ultimately. And my biggest, you know, thrill is when I see a client who's really got it and they're like, I don't need you anymore. Yeah. I think I'm good here. You know, it's, don't you think it's, if they're still dependent on you after that amount of time and they're needy of you, you go, oh, I don't think you've learned what I want you to learn, which is you know more about yourself than I do. You really do. And you can even gauge when you've eaten a meal and you just feel content and there's no bloat and everything goes down and the next day things are moving and your sleep was deep. Like those things, what we've, I really think we have to bring it back to all those checks that people could and should be able to do themselves. And simplifying everything, not overcomplicating things.
So you're saying your whole approach is trying to create awareness with the person themselves so they can be autonomous with their own health. Like that's the, always the goal.
I think so. Yeah. What's yours?
You're like speaking my inner monologue. It's almost scary how much we, I've literally said that when somebody doesn't need to talk to me anymore, that's like the goal. And so we collide on that so perfectly. Yeah. But I did want to, when somebody is very meticulous about diet or very, so one, a person with digestion problems, they're probably very aware of what's happening in their digestion. So is it warranted for them to be very picky about what they eat in a situation where the foods are laced with so many additives and things like that? Like, I don't want to, we were talking about how like, oh, we're so free, we don't think about nutrition anymore. But I know there was a time that I definitely thought about every single thing I consumed because I had inflammatory digestion. So maybe you, like Ray said that quote where if you're not thinking about the health problem anymore, you've probably moved past it, you know. But what would you say to somebody who's in the thick of it? Like they're reacting to everything. They have a low temperature impulse. Like how do they move forward in that situation when they're in complete chaos?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think it's taking that pause in life, limiting all the other possible stresses around them, perhaps saying no to things and taking time out a little bit is one thing. Simplifying the diet, bring it back to, I suppose, the core foods that seem to work really well for most people, but even within that list, you've got, you know, certain personal issues that people can't deal with, even the most perfect seeming foods. And then just the trial and error, but I suppose doing it in a way where it's not adding additional stress because a person who's already functioning that way is probably already, you know, they've got elevated cortisol just in the situation they're in. So I suppose approaching it in a way that doesn't add to that stress, but reminds them that, no, we'll get to the root of things. But for now, let's perhaps take out those common irritants, the things that your body doesn't need as such, it might enjoy, but it doesn't really need. And always making a point of saying that, just say it's perhaps the grains they're eating and they love bread or rice, whatever it is. Just reiterating that, okay, let's try for 3 weeks, say. Let's just take that out for 3 weeks and let's just see how you go. But making it clear that it's just 3 weeks. Yeah. Because if you said to, you know, like I'm half Greek and bread is part of your DNA, like good bread. And if I said to a Greek client, no more bread ever, I mean, the depression would kick in and the stress and the how will I socialize? How will I function? So just reminding them, let's just try this, just a window of time. Let's block that out. Let's get to the end of it and we'll reassess then. But if they can experience relief from their symptoms, and they may not, maybe that wasn't the causative thing, but I suppose that elimination diet done in such a way that is just temporary and let's together experiment and for them to be their own scientists and let's explore this together. And only their body can give me that feedback. I can't tell them if you cut out this and this and this, you're going to feel better. Like we don't know. We don't know until we try, but you know, I'll back you as we're doing this and let's explore how your symptoms shift or perhaps go away. And that might be the thing for them to go, well, I did feel so good without that. Perhaps that's inspired me to find a substitute or go without completely or just have it occasionally. And then maybe after 6 months, they've given their gut that relief. Perhaps, you know, the tissue or the integrity has improved that they can eat that food occasionally, no problem. So I don't know. I like to be gentle in the approach, but I guess I'm just there to hold their hand through it, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I feel like the more and more I do this, it's more about not relaying technical information and just kind of having like a good chat with somebody. Because
People want a good chat too. I think there's been too many instances where they've suffered and they haven't been given I don't know, no one's really heard them.
Yeah.
Or they might have relied in their past on their GP, who might give them an average of 4 minutes and chat, and they get told what to do and what to take, and they don't, there's no listening going on, or in most cases. So I think just to hear someone acknowledge their struggles and make them feel like, oh yeah, this is completely normal, I see people like this all the time, and then they feel better. And also, like, what they've been dealt with in terms of food options out there in most generic sort of food stores and the standard kind of diet these days is junk versions of good food. So maybe bread isn't the devil, but how it's been processed of late is pretty crappy.
Yeah.
But if you find traditionally prepared bread or you make it yourself, it might go down absolutely fine and it's wonderful. So it's just, you know, ice cream's another one. It's now perceived as a junk food only because it's full of junk. But if you made ice cream the old-fashioned way, it's phenomenal food. So giving them either the tools to create those foods themselves, or if they're time poor, there are often places who are, you know, acknowledging older practices, and you can get, you know, good versions of these foods too. So it shouldn't have to be, you know, torturous. And for me, what's as important as how nutritious the food is and digestible, it has to be delicious. Otherwise, you're just not going to trigger those digestive processes. Yeah. You're not going to, and what's, if you're not going to enjoy life either, like, it's got to be, that is as important to me.
So you're saying people should take raw liver and freeze it and then try to shoot it down?
No, I'm not really fan of that.
Oh, I thought that was a good thing to do. When I tried that, it didn't digest at all. Like, it just like went down my intestine. It caused a ton of irritation. Like, it was, I mean, you're completely right. It has to bring a level of satisfaction. So let me bounce this idea off of you. I thought when Ray was talking about foods and stuff, it was almost like how not to poison yourself rather than the best, the optimal diet to eat. Because again, you're like, I'm in Mexico, you're in Oz. We have different foods available. Like, you can't talk about some standardized diet, because I say this example all the time, but when I was in Manila in the Philippines, they only had UHT milk. They didn't even have pasteurized milk.
Really?
Where I was.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with UHT milk, but it was just kind of funny because if I was some crazy raw milk person and I was like, oh, people can only drink raw milk, like, I would be like, okay, excluding the Philippines completely and a bunch of other places.
And they're going to feel like, well, I'm screwed, so why even bother? So give up on everything else. I know. And that perfectionist tendency is really pretty harmful and toxic too. And that's such an important point. And like in Mexico, you probably got corn tortillas prepared correctly with a lime, you know, and over here we have predominantly just crappy wheat ones with fillers, and, you know, it's completely different food.
What do you, I hope we're not beating a dead horse here, but when somebody is very puritanical about food, how do you approach that? How do you unwind that idea that food is not the be all end all? There are other things, vitamin D or like thyroid, et cetera. Like, how do you get that across to the person?
I probably tell them my story of being, I call myself a recovering perfectionist. Absolutely. So I tell them I know how they're thinking, and then I reiterate how I always felt and thought and still do sometimes. And they nod and go, oh, you know the pain. So but yeah, I think reminding them that if their headspace is so fixated on, oh God, what's for dinner and how's it going to be and how I'm going to prepare it and where am I picking up from, it's what else are you getting done in that afternoon? Like, your quality of life is going downhill for that. But maybe thinking of things in terms of that sort of spectrum of perfect at one end, totally crap and toxic at the other end, and at least getting maybe closer to that end of the spectrum and just a little bit further away from that end. And if week by week, month by month, you're just eating generally simpler, better quality foods, you're still going to be better off than that last week and that last month. So it's, finding the best from what is available to you is always going to be an improvement. And it's the particularly toxic things that are probably easier to, you know, avoid if you put them in a short list. But yeah, and I suppose too, with people, if they're getting more comfortable with simple ways of preparing their own food, that step in itself, you're going to be avoiding so many additional additives because they're things you're just not going to add from your own kitchen. So changing, you know, your your basic habits and getting some knowledge around food preparation. I think that's an improvement. And then, of course, still, you know, occasionally you're invited out for dinner at a restaurant. Go and eat at the restaurant. You know, if you're not completely compromised and you're in a good, an okay space, you still should do that. And perhaps with tricks up your sleeves of how to buffer repercussions of, you know, some poofers in that meal or something.
How many of the clients that you talk to, how many of them do not cook? Is that something you really try to emphasize? Like, I mean, if you're just eating out every meal, it's going to be impossible to figure out what's causing harm.
Yeah, it's harder.
Helping. Yeah.
Not too many don't really cook at all. There's been a few, and that is tricky. And they'll pretty much give me their menus from their local cafes or their work, you know, lunch options. And it's tricky to work around. So they can still feel better if you make better choices, but you're not going to feel as good as you could. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You've got to have that control over what you put in your body. And then you can definitely do it occasionally, but I think it's most of the time it's ideal if you've your hands on a bit with your food.
Agreed. So a topic that has come up, I'm sure many, 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 many times in the last 10, 11, 12 years, weight gain. So say somebody goes on the pro metabolic diet, whatever the hell that is.
What is that?
Yeah, whatever that is. And they, which includes like cod liver oil, copper supplementation. I'm just joking. And they start gaining weight. And so they're like, oh, well, obviously this is unacceptable to them. How would you approach that situation?
How would I approach it if they've been trying all those other things and frustrated that they're not working?
Well, okay, let me shorten it a little bit. So what if somebody just started, they were eating relatively well, okay? They were eating like whole foods and they start eating carbohydrate and they gained weight. How would you approach that?
I'd probably assess if they're making a lot of changes overnight. That's usually the case when things are changed too often and they get a bit excited when they hear it said that perhaps sugar's not so bad and they do a bit too much too quickly. Absolutely. So I think slow and steady is always the better way to do things. And I'm always cautious of making sure people only make very small changes very gradually. Mm-hmm. So that would be one thing. But I think if hormones in particular have been in a mess for a very long time, perhaps since teenage years even, and you're talking to a woman in her 50s plus, then that's something. And you look at their menstrual history perhaps, and they're talking about these heavy, painful periods and clotting and all sorts of issues and perhaps estrogen dominance for decades. To help them unravel that is really important. That's where perhaps they need a little help with thyroid if that's indicated or some progesterone. But for them to have to commit to the idea that, okay, it's taken me this long to get here, it's going to take me at least that long to move out of this, go slow. And with that comes the stress relieving kind of lifestyle changes being enormous, because obviously if cortisol's high, we're not going to shift that fat. So yeah, little lifestyle changes they can make are probably the most important thing to start with. Yeah, it's just that constant reminder of, okay, we're going slow here, and we don't want to shock your body either. You know, it's been used to a certain kind of habits for a very long time. So yeah, all of that. That's not really as clear as mud.
I think very well said. Like the body, if somebody just eats to appetite and they're gaining an extreme amount of weight, like you have a problem. You know, it's not. That's why the pro metabolic stuff is so unhelpful, because the ideas here being presented are way bigger than that. Like, you mentioned like a person could go get thyroid. If a person is eating to appetite and their temperature is 95 or 36 or something, they have like extreme hypothyroidism, you know, and of course they're going to gain weight. Like their body is primed to store fat.
But as Ray always said, you know, I think probably the most important thing I ever heard him say was context is everything.
Yeah.
You know, like right there, it tells us it's dealing with that individual, one individual at a time. Yeah. And it's why, I mean, there's no one book that could ever cover, you know, this is going to fix your health issues or, you know, the weight loss plan. It's just so different for everyone, and the journey they've been on to that point, what they've accumulated, what damage they've done. There's just so many factors, and it's probably more important they come to a level of understanding about their own bodies and their own background first, and you help them become aware of that. and then to see the things that have probably contributed to their issues, that it wasn't just some random occurrence and poor me. Mm-hmm. And not to say it's their fault by any means, but, you know, it's just the end result of choices, whether they were conscious or not. So, yeah, the psychology part of it, I think, is a big thing. And then maybe there's that level of relief that comes with them going, oh, okay, so it does make sense why my body is functioning the way it has been. And perhaps it's functioning perfectly given the situation. Perhaps it needed to hold fat stores to keep certain toxins away from my vital organs. Perhaps, mm-hmm. you know, maybe it's actually working perfectly. So I've got to now treat it differently to see if it responds differently. Yeah. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah. Very well said. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I talk to lots of young guys, and the young, lean guys tend to have like digestive
problems. You get the young guys. Yeah. I get the young girls.
the leanness is like, I think I've almost thought that is like the worst state to be in. Like the body is so catabolic that it's chewing through the tissue so quickly. And I could think of 20 obese people that I thought were healthier than like the leanest young guy that I had talked to. So that kind of gets into, I think Georgie in one of our podcasts talked about the obesity paradox. Like the body laying down fat is actually desirable to getting extremely lean. So I know it's in a cultural interpretation that's not going to be accepted, but
So what, the next fat person that comes to you and you sort of say, it's okay, just you're good as is.
Yeah.
They probably won't be happy with that. I still want to lose some.
Okay, but the people that have lost weight, do you think it's like consistency of, is it self-awareness, gaining self-knowledge? Like what do you think the keys to the kingdom are?
Definitely consistency and giving it the time. It could be a year till they really see solid results that are going to stay with them. And the movement factor too, maybe even changing up how they move. And they're often the clients who've been thrashing themselves at the gym and perhaps doing far too much cardio, even too much weight exercise, but straining themselves too much. And they pulled that right back, and they might just be going for long walks for a while and stretching a bit more and learning to breathe again and just getting outdoors. And they find themselves losing weight when the really stressful exercise saw them hold on to it, which is really interesting too. So, the exercise as well as the food.
Well said. I want to switch gears here because you've been pregnant before, so that is not my forte. And so I think you can provide valuable insight on this issue. So people asked me about this, and I've done a little bit of investigation of like postpartum and things, but are there anything you've noticed in your 10 plus years of doing this stuff that makes the whole pregnancy process easier? Is it progesterone supplementation? Is it Tom Brewer stuff? Is there anything that sticks out in your mind?
Good question. One thing, first of all, is to say that as a practitioner, the advice I used to give before I was a mother, I'm so sorry. Then you go through it yourself and you go, Jesus Christ, I have no idea. And the advice I used to give about how to feed your child, and now I have children and they're picky and they're opinionated, and there's no advice anymore. It's just, that goes out the window.
Yeah.
So yeah, living through it, yeah, it's a big, huge learning curve. But thinking back to my first pregnancy, so I've got two kids, that was 10 years ago now. I'm very grateful that I found Ray's work a good almost 2 years before that pregnancy, because prior to that, the type of food experiments I've been doing to myself were not conducive to conception, I don't think, or having the healthiest baby or the best recovery for myself personally that I could have had. So thank God I had a couple of years to really feed myself well and ground myself a bit better, because my pregnancies were great. But it was so interesting going through the pregnancy process. I was kind of like, you know, I was me, the mum to be, but at the same time I was that practitioner going, what can I learn from this? And I'm studying as I go, and I was using myself as my own guinea pig really, but at the time too, bouncing off Ray quite a bit, and anyone else in that realm who'd been through that. Well, Ray obviously hadn't been through that experience, but that's what actually also became quite interesting to me, that in my first, I think, 10 weeks of the pregnancy, I was pretty lucky. I felt fairly nauseous. I never threw up, but I just, food aversions were quite strong. and all the usual foods that I would have loved and I knew would do me good, could not even look at. And throughout that process, I remember emailing Ray and saying, well, if I just can't eat certain foods at the moment and I'm just feeling quite sick at the thought of certain foods, but I know I need more energy in, any ideas? And all he could say was eat an extra carrot salad. And at the time, the thought and look of a carrot salad made me want to throw up. Like I I couldn't even get one down, let alone an extra one.
Yeah.
And little bits of advice like that, I remember thinking at the time, oh my God, as brilliant as he is, he's never been pregnant. He doesn't know this feeling. So I felt I had to figure it out, but he did put me onto Tom Brewer.
Okay, we're back. I'm so sorry, Emma. That's like the third time that's happened. So I need to start closing that program. You were talking about Tom Brewer, food aversions. Ray has never been pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom's work, super helpful for anyone going through that or about to go through that on the pregnancy topic, was just his prioritizing protein and salt being such an important factor too. So they supported me definitely. And then throughout the pregnancy, I dabbled with some Progest E, which I'm pretty sure helped. I was very sporadic with it. I wasn't terribly consistent, but Ray reminded me that it was something that you can take exponential amounts of throughout the pregnancy. Helped, but I think I'd retrain my brain before the pregnancy to realize that eating plenty of food is not only okay, but it's necessary, and your requirement for all nutrients and calories in general obviously go up in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And if I had a craving, perhaps that was my body signaling something quite intelligent that I needed something. So I ate all the cheesecake and all the ice cream I could get my hands on, just really good versions of it.
Yeah.
With the Tom Brewer stuff, one thing I found interesting was his books were brilliant, but I must say that last chapter that goes into some of the dietary ideas or here's a week of eating outlined, not so much in keeping with the crux of the information I found. And Ray agreed with me on that, that there were a lot of legumes and grains and other things in there, which personally at the time I certainly couldn't have eaten and still to this day don't thrive on. So yeah, take it with a grain of salt, literally. But still really helpful, insightful work. But I didn't find any one resource that really, helped me on every level through pregnancy. So I took it upon myself to just keep digging, obviously, extract from Ray as much as I could. Dodie was super helpful. Tom Brewer's work, Dalton's, a few others. And yeah, I put a few articles together on my site that are still there, just on some of my findings in general with pregnancy. But again, look, every pregnancy is different depending on the state of the woman as they go into the pregnancy, depending on so many factors. So for me personally, I did what got me through it and I felt good for, and had over time two healthy babies, touch wood, with very large head circumferences, which is what Ray had warned me would happen, and it did. That was really interesting. But yeah, going through the process is really fascinating. And also another thing I noticed, and I'm not going to name names, but there were certain practitioners I was sort of bouncing off at the time who were helpful to a point, but then the minute I told them I was pregnant, they stepped back and basically said, I can't work with you. I will be too liable. Pregnancy is
crazy.
Like, yeah. And would just kind of halt everything and, you know, not give my money back either, as if pregnancy was something, a sign that you were unhealthy and perhaps contagious. And I thought that was really sad that, for a lot of practitioners are a bit that way with pregnant clients, as if to say, well, I won't help you because, yeah, they don't want to perhaps do something that could link back to them being accountable. But it's a time of your life where you just want as much support as possible, because all of a sudden it's not just about you and the choices you're making for you, which you don't mind if you make a few mistakes. Suddenly it's about this other being that's so precious to you, and yeah, it's bigger than you. So from you're wanting to obviously make the right decisions, but tenfold, and you're getting dished out advice left, right, and center from all sorts. Everyone gives their two cents, including the doctors and obstetricians and everything else. But then, breastfeeding's a whole nother story. And in our culture, it's still pushed that, okay, you've spit out the baby, it's time to start that post-baby diet and pull back on calories, but you need even more calories, even more nutrients postpartum than you do during pregnancy. But it's not really encouraged, not really talked about. So it's for me, I had to, you know, as we all do, you learn as you go through all these sort of life experiences. But yeah, there's not enough support, I don't think, out there that's really supporting women to be completely nourished. And yes, it's about having a healthy baby, but even more than that, you've got to make sure there's enough reserves left for you personally, that the baby will be fine most of the time. It's what's left for mum as well, because mum's got to be the one to be, you know, on all the time after that.
It's almost like they don't want people having kids. It's so weird.
Oh, it's weird, isn't it? Do you think?
One question here is I'm pretty ignorant to this issue. Is it like, is the mainstream saying it's counterindicated to take progesterone during pregnancy? Are they saying that it's risky in some way? Because I know that Ray felt extremely strongly that there was like no evidence whatsoever to say that, but that was like the mainstream viewpoint or something. Is that ring any bells for you?
Yeah, probably. I think I bounced it off my obstetrician at the time that I was dabbling in this, or I may not have even. I usually just don't do what I'm told anyway, so I don't really listen to that sort of thing. I might have overheard from other clients too over time if it was suggested or as a potential thing that they could use to support them. Maybe some negative talk, but they're usually the type of people who've already been doing this a while, or, gosh, if they're open to talking to someone like me as opposed to the naturopath down the road, they're already the critical thinking type that if they decide they feel good about doing it, you know, they're going to do it anyway. Yeah. So I don't think it's encouraged, but at the same time, I mean, how can it not be? It's progestation. You would think it's common sense, the more the better. I guess it could be more of an issue, especially in America. Is it particularly with the warning they have to put on progesterone products about the potential to cause cancer, all of that. Or, so maybe that's more known about over there.
Or maybe I'm goofing up the argument. Maybe they say if you use it, you should taper it off like right before birth. Maybe that was the thing Ray was saying. That's like not, there's no evidence for that or something.
Well, yeah. Although he did say to me, cause I was pregnant for a long time. Mm-hmm. I got 42 weeks and nothing budging and everything getting, you know, just growing inside me. So he did say pull off when you're around the time you want to actually have the baby. Otherwise, it'll be too comfy there.
Got it.
So he did say that. He didn't say it was like a warning as such. Mm-hmm. It was just more along the lines of you want to allow labor to kick in and that maybe that might stall that a little bit.
Got it.
That was my perception though.
We're answering a bunch of questions people had for us. I want to get to two more things before I let you go. You mentioned the feeding kids. So what was that experience like, and how did you remedy what you thought you should feed them, versus what they will eat? Did you have any strategies for that?
It's an ongoing, ongoing challenge. when they're little, again, I think I sort of followed along the lines of that sort of be guided by the child or the child-led weaning approach before I even knew it had a name. But my babies only wanted to be breastfed till a certain point. They didn't even show interest in solids till maybe, I don't know, 9 or 10 months. Wow. They might steal something off my plate or gnaw at a piece of fruit. A lot of things just got turfed to the side. And there's that old adage that, you know, food before one is just for fun. I think it's true to a point. I discussed it with Ray and he pretty much acknowledge that. He sort of said that with most nutrients are covered in the breast milk if they're feeding on demand, and it's only past 12 months that their own iron stores start to deplete, because the breast milk's in it, you know, the iron is the one thing not in there. Mm-hmm. So that's when it would make sense for them to eat some meat and other foods. But he wasn't stressed about it in terms of must get them eating other foods. Yeah, I just sort of let them guide me. And then from there on, it made sense for them. Like they'd gnaw on a lamb chop and eat sweet fruits and drink chocolate milk and, yeah, all the good stuff. But I think for me, I wasn't too stressed about, are they eating enough of the right foods with the right nutrients, because I knew they were getting plenty of breast milk and they wouldn't stop. I think they were both 3.5 when they, each one of them, well, I had to, yeah, talk them out of it. So they might have kept going. Gets to a point, it's literally draining. I did 6 years of it.
Jeez.
So I knew that they had that backing and they had all the good stuff, as well as the antibodies and the things you just can't get from other foods. So on top of that, it was just the foods that they seemed to enjoy. And funnily enough, it was, I guess they were pro-metabolic foods, you might call them.
Do you notice anything like they're very attentive or like they're very highly intelligent?
Stubborn.
Say it again.
Headstrong,
yeah,
stubborn.
Yeah. Well, anything that Ray had talked about with kind of well-fed, exuberant babies.
Yeah. When I was doing progesterone, even before my pregnancy, he literally wrote, I can't remember his wording, but he said, word of warning, if you keep your progesterone levels optimum and your thyroid's up, you'll have babies with large head sizes who will grow up to be very precocious. And it stuck in me, and you think, oh yeah, but both babies, they were 7-8 centimeters bigger head circumference than average. And it was the first thing midwives would, you know, explain to me, oh my God, big heads. They still looked really beautiful, but it was big around the back there. Yeah. So it wasn't like moon face.
Yeah.
Child, yeah, children. large head sizes, which I hear that head circumference average is getting smaller by the year. So that's a real concern. So to think they were bigger was perhaps testament to the foods I was eating and perhaps the progesterone. But yeah, that headstrong, won't be told what to do, all of that is very much a thing, which I love, and I want them to be those kinds of adults one day. They won't be able to, yeah, walk over them. But when they're little, it's pretty tiring.
Yeah.
Some, yeah, fascinating. And like my little boy, he's 7 and should be in grade 1, but he does, you know, grade 5 level maths. Like he's pretty, and he taught himself everything, read all the stuff at a young age, very much self-driven. Yeah. So that's, yeah, very, very interesting. And not to say, cause you know, I ate so well or anything like that, but perhaps there's no coincidences when it comes to, yeah, the things Ray taught us and, you know, how they've turned out. There's no allergies, none of those. And so many kids out there have got food sensitivities and allergies. It's the first thing you're asked if you go for a play date at a friend's house, you know, any food sensitivities, what can't you eat? I'm like, nope, we'll eat everything. So it's interesting. So, just in terms of what to do when they're refusing certain foods and things like that, it's just, yeah, day by day figuring that out. And what might work one week, they suddenly decide they're not into that anymore. And I don't want to pander to that either, but I guess it's like big kids too. We can all get bored of things. Mm. So just changing it up a little and exposing them to as many flavors as possible. And even if there's something new that they refuse to eat, I'll tell them at least try it. We at least try things and they might either be surprised or they might hate it, but at least perhaps it's familiar in their palate in the future. And they see it on their kitchen table, like it's something that's they're familiar with. And maybe when they've got more mature taste buds, they'll give it a try later. Maybe.
Got it. Incredible. Okay. Before I let you go, cause I only told you I was going to keep you for an hour. Tell us about Saturate.
That's okay. I can go a little longer if you need to. Saturate, my other baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's keeping us actually really busy at the moment, which is, so I'm not consulting quite so much. I've got a lot to juggle with that as well. And I'm also homeschooling my kids these days, but that's another conversation. But it's just kind of grown really organically, which has been lovely with a lot of hard work. But so probably 3.5 years ago, Kitty and I, well, she came up with this great idea that we really need to create better skincare than what's out there, with so many clients requesting advice on what we would recommend. And obviously seeing even the most clean skincare, perhaps certified organic and all of that was good and perhaps better than the toxic stuff, but all still loaded with the polyunsaturated oils, like all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've just gone and spent all these months educating your client about removing those from your pantry and being cautious of eating those foods out. And then they're slathering their bodies in it. So obviously it's something that they themselves became aware of and were requesting. So I never set out to make skincare or have a skincare business, but it was just the demand was there. And between the two of us, we figured, well, I think we've got the know-how. I think we could give this a go. So we went through many formulators who didn't want to innovate, and they all still were very fixated on the fact that you had to use industry standard emulsifiers, preservatives, fillers, the types of oils we wanted to use, they weren't so keen on. The types of rather old-fashioned ingredients we wanted to dredge up, you know, it was all too hard to find. I remember once being told that if we make the type of product we want to make, it won't be profitable enough. Like, that was a problem. Like, it's just been a really eye-opening experience, the whole getting this stuff out there. And finally we found formulators who were excited by the idea and willing to, you know, work with me. I'm a bit of a headache. I'm a bit OCD on the details, but when I'm bouncing it off the likes of Ray and Georgie, who's been incredibly helpful too in the process, and knowing to the nth degree how beneficial or potentially toxic certain ingredients are, we figured, well, let's just make it perfect. Like, let's make it as good as we can get it. So we took the time and we finally came out with something that's held together. And as we've jammed into there as many of the good things as we could get from all over the world. And it's been, yeah, exciting and a relief to finally get it out. But it's been, yeah, quite a journey.
I couldn't believe all the stuff that you got into the product. Like,
oh, really?
I was reading the back. Nice, I was like, oh, like,
you would appreciate it.
But it was just like a greatest hits of all these anti-inflammatory compounds. So cool. And I was just like, you're not surprising me with what you're saying, because it seemed like, so again, I know nothing about skincare stuff, but it seemed like it was completely novel, like it never been done before. And it was like an achievement of, and I know it took you a really long time. Like, I think we must have talked about this like a long time ago. And then it just, like, when was the launch date of Cetra?
Gosh, I reckon we've had it out not quite a year.
Yeah.
So exactly. I think before that, 3 years of formulating.
Jeez. Yeah. That is
just in trial and error, and literally having to abort project, source another formulator, start again, you know, because we're constantly working with no people. And then we finally found some yes people and they could see our vision. And it's still, I mean, they're in that realm, they're in that industry where every other thing in there is full of, you know, safflower oil, sunflower oil, all sorts of seed oils, all sorts of industrial vegetable oils. And they had seen that as being fine, okay, and what's the problem? And we've had to educate them that these things are pro-aging ultimately. Yeah. And for them to understand lipids like that, it's been eye-opening for them. And, yeah, with every formulation they'd come up with, I'd be there going nitpicking it. No, we're not doing that. We're taking this out. We need more of that. We actually need a decent amount of all these actives as well. And they've got to know me. And they've been awesome. So we've managed to come up with exactly what I wanted in there. And along the way, again, I'm just so grateful to have had connection with Ray throughout that process too. And I remember initially just saying to him, I just want to make better stuff out there. And he was so supportive and encouraging, just fantastic about it. And I'd suggest certain kind of combinations of ingredients and he would give his feedback on it too. And was just, yeah, super, super helpful.
Invaluable. Yeah.
I'd like to think it's something that, you know, I'm just a conduit of what Ray's taught me as well and opened my eyes to and certain elements that I wouldn't have known about otherwise, and hopefully inspired by him just to put better stuff out in the world, because there's so much rubbish that's just sold off good marketing and it's really alarming. And I think the other catalyst was becoming a mother, obviously, that you become tenfold cautious of the things that you might apply to your skin, and especially their skin. And they've got such delicate, porous, beautiful, perfect skin, and they really don't need a thing. But if they've had a long hot bath and their skin's a bit stripped, or there's a bit of cradle cap or a bit of a dry spot, to know that the stuff you're putting on there if and when it makes it into the bloodstream, it's all good. Some of what's in these baby products is just horrific. So, yeah, all of those factors combined to push us to do this. And, yeah, hopefully people, yeah, we're getting great feedback. So hopefully, you know, enough people benefit from it.
What's in the future? You guys doing more R&D for new products or anything? Or are you just,
wanna, really exciting.
Tell us about
well, the thing is, it's interesting. There's me and Kitty. This is our little baby, our project together, Saturé, which is French for saturated. I don't even figure that out. And Kitty is my perfect project partner. Yeah. Like, she is the yang. I am the yin.
She's the bulldog.
Oh, my God. You know her.
Yeah.
She's exactly as she. That's Kitty.
Yeah.
So I'm there, you know, formulating and procrastinating, even though because I'm also designer from another world, and that I'll procrastinate over the font color and the font and the text and the label design. I do all that too, and the layout of the Instagram post, all of that, like to the nth degree. I'll procrastinate, and Kitty will give me a deadline. She'll make it happen, and she'll push me and get the whip out on me. Whereas I'll dot her I's and cross her t's. So we do a bit of both, but
I don't think I know that awesome, about the design stuff. Have you ever told me that before? If you have, maybe. I forgot. I don't think I knew that. That's amazing. I love the design of Saturé stuff. I thought it was cool the moment I saw it.
Oh, it's simple. Yeah. I'm a bit schizophrenic. I grew up, my father's an architect, my mum's an artist, my grandmother's ceramicist. Like, everyone was designing all my life and always doing art, definitely. But I did fashion design, and that was my first genre at uni, and worked in industry for a few years. And I've always dabbled on the side in other creative projects. But since I was 9, I was reading books about nutrition. And it wasn't until, I was 20 something that I thought, hang on, maybe I should be doing this. So I flip between the two worlds a little bit.
You just always had a good aesthetic. Like all the content was always stylized in a cool way. So
you're
always
kind.
Liked it. Yeah. I'm being serious.
Oh, well, I always love yours. You've got that in you, Danny. Definitely.
I'm a one trick pony.
I always think complimented you when you took a photo of liver once and it was so beautiful. And I thought only Danny could take a photo of liver and just the lighting was right. Everything. You've got that.
All I need is a William Blake painting. Then I'll lower the contrast and add some grain to it and it's done.
But you have the eye to pick what looks good. We'll have to work on something creative together one day, I think.
I would love to do that. Hey, I'm going to let you go because I've already gone past the time here. Hey, Emma, such a complete total pleasure. Again, I don't think I align with anybody. Maybe Keith. Keith, you guys both just kind of say my inner monologue. It's so,
Keith too. Yeah, I love Keith.
Yeah, it's just so close. Fantastic. It's crazy. But hey, I really appreciate it. I goofed on the time, and I really appreciate you being so flexible. Give everybody the websites and the Instagram and everywhere people can find you.
So
the website.
I'm a bit slack on Instagram, but I'm just the nutrition coach on Instagram. Saturé is SATUREE. _ official. I think there's another _ because our Instagram got hacked and taken down and we had to start again.
Jeez.
So anyway, you'll find the link on my Instagram, and I'm just thenutritioncoach.com.au on my website.
Awesome. Hey, Emma, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Danny. So nice to kind of see you.
Yeah. Total
talk
pleasure.
Soon.
Thanks again. Appreciate it.